From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. We open the week with a debate about vaping. Chances are someone you know and love uses e-cigarettes, also known as vaping. The Trump administration has proposed a national ban on vaping, citing a half dozen deaths that have been linked to e-cigarettes. Critics also say that vape companies use flavored e-cigarettes to target kids.
We sat down with some of the experts, and we talked to people who vape who don't want a ban. First, you'll hear Andrew Ribble. He vapes, and he owns Liquid Cloud Lounge. Then you'll hear Dr. Michael Mendoza, the Commissioner of Public Health for Monroe County, and Scott McIntosh, Director of the Smoking Research Program at the University of Rochester Medical Center.
I was unable to quit smoking. I was unable to tie my shoes, walk a flight of stairs, any of those things, without losing my breath. As soon as, within a month and a half of vaping, I was able to run. I was able to play basketball with my girls. I've got a 78-year-old man who lives next door to me who smoked for 55 years. In the last 6 months, he's been vaping, okay? His color is better. His overall well-being is better. He looks, it's a transformation that I didn't expect to see. And he was gray. He was washed out. And because traditional tobacco kills you, 480,000 people a year.
We can't argue with that last point. Is that data point with his older neighbor, is that compelling to you, Dr. Mendoza?
It's not compelling. I mean, I understand. I understand where you're coming from. I understand the selection bias, essentially. That's a scientific term for how, the N of one is so compelling. And stories, let's face it, are compelling. But as a scientist, as a physician, my standard for science is quite high. And, guidelines in the lexicon of medical evidence are relatively low. We look for real scientific trials that have been controlled in all the other ways that we make sure good science is good science, and that is not yet good science.
Okay. No. Scott, you want to jump in here? Go ahead.
Yeah, just quickly. We know more than the public thinks we know. I mean, we know that these products have carcinogens. We know that they cause oxidative stress, which leads to problems in respiratory system and can lead to things, a popular thing people have heard about is popcorn lung. So it's not like, the jury's still out. Let's wait 10 years until the first cases of cancer occur. In a recent paper by the American Heart Association, they determined that e-cigarettes alone, cigarettes alone, or both together, all three of those cause cardiac problems. So it's not that the jury's out. It's that the evidence of the harm is growing.
Well, our perspective right now is that, there is an ongoing investigation into what is causing these deaths. And yes, it does seem that THC black market cartridges are the smoking gun, if you will. But to my mind, I have a high standard for what is evidence. And in my view, I think we still have some science and some investigation to obtain. And until we have that, and in my role in the county, I want to do what I can to keep everybody safe. And so if this means perhaps overreacting a little bit for now, I'm okay with that.
Okay. And so I'm sure people ask you the very simple and direct question, is vaping safe? The short answer is what to that, doctor?
My answer is no. We don't have good evidence right now for a lot of what is in the vape products. And it is true that you can tell what's in, the ingredients, but I don't think we yet know what happens when you heat these chemicals up to these high temperatures and what happens over the long haul.
And to be clear on that, some listeners might be thinking, well, ask him if smoking is safe. I think what I mean to be asking you is not whether vaping is safe vis-a-vis smoking. I think I mean to be asking, is it unsafe to the point where it might cause rapid and dangerous impacts? Is that fair? Is that kind of what we're looking at?
It appears to be true that vaping can cause rapid impacts, yes. And we've long known that the long-term impact of vaping is to be determined. And now we're seeing some potentially short-term risks. So there's a lot that has to happen here. And this investigation is really what we're hoping to complete. But right now we're looking at what do we do to keep the public safe.
Next up, we're wondering if you consider yourself a climate nihilist. That's a term used for people who feel hopeless about climate change, and they think that none of our efforts will matter when it comes to stopping it. Renowned author Jonathan Franzen essentially outed himself as a climate nihilist in the latest issue of The New Yorker. Franzen writes that human beings are not going to do what it takes to prevent catastrophic global warming. Franzen says we should shift our attention to reducing suffering as a result of the crisis.
But the vibrant climate activism community pushed back hard. In this clip, we talked to Dr. Genevieve Gunther, the founder of EndClimateSilence.org. Here's Dr. Gunther offering her view of Franzen and his decision to basically give up.
that's a moral abomination. You know, I'm a mother, and even if you're not a mother, you may love this world and the other people in it, and you may want there to be a future for other people, and you want to fight for that because it's the right thing to do, and also because we still have time to stave off the worst effects of climate change. And there's been so much change just in the past 18 months. If someone had said 2 years ago that CNN would have a 7-hour program about climate change and that the ratings for that program would be better during the primetime slot than what CNN usually airs, I wouldn't have believed it. What's changed is unimaginable so far. And that's the way systems change. It happens very slowly and then it happens all at once. I had three different problems with the piece. First, it distorted the science. He is not giving an accurate picture of what the science says will happen if we cross the 2C boundary of warming. The other problem I had with it was that it was completely apolitical. Like, it doesn't have an idea of political change and how that change might happen. And because Franson lacks that idea, he imagines that it means the political change won't happen. Furthermore, he looks back at the past 30 years since science started sounding the alarm about climate change, and he sees that we haven't reduced emissions. In fact, emissions have been growing. But he doesn't understand the politics of that fact, the fact that the fossil fuel industry has teamed up with politicians, not only to distort the scientific facts and create doubt among the public, but to literally block any kind of climate policy from passing on both the state and the federal levels. So this has been a political fight all along. We aren't further along, not because we have some sort of inherent desire to destroy ourselves or inability to stop burning fossil fuels. We aren't further along because there's been this political fight that's been happening that we have been losing. But that doesn't mean we have to continue to lose the fight.
Okay.
So those, and then my third problem is that he also contradicts himself. He imagines in the piece that we're going to have this widespread apocalyptic breakdown of our climate system, but then he also sort of imagines that we'll all be able to have farmers markets and, you know, local agriculture that will bring us closer to our neighbors. And I don't really understand how he imagines those two things simultaneously. And I think that speaks to the fact that he hasn't thought any of this through. And I don't think people really should listen to him as an authority on climate because he gets the science wrong and he gets the politics wrong.
We'll turn now to the hottest diet in the country, keto. Millions of Americans are trying the ketogenic diet with the hopes of losing weight or gaining energy or even reversing long-term impacts of aging.
But is it safe? And does keto work? Medical experts have been critical of keto. We welcomed Jill Chodak, clinical dietitian with the Center for Community Health and Prevention at the University of Rochester Medical Center. She discussed her concerns about keto and she explained what keto actually is.
Well, I think it's important to set the stage first with judgment-free zone here for me. I'm not coming on to kind of attack keto because I know it can be very divisive. I want to acknowledge as a clinician that we do have ketogenic dietitians at URMC who it's their sole purpose to utilize ketogenic diet in a clinical realm, and its efficacy is well known in the science-related field. And so it's utilized for epilepsy and preventing seizures in both pediatric and adult patients. It also has been known to be effective in cancer treatments in kind of slowing the growth of tumors, and we don't know what it can do yet. So in the clinical realm, I want to set the stage there and say that, yes, it can be useful, and we do use it already clinically for those things. Where I tend to have pause is that I think right now it's become a fad diet where some folks might be recklessly jumping into something without actually knowing how it can negatively impact their health. And so I'm just kind of here to be curious about or to encourage curiosity in folks to know more about what they're eating, what they're putting in their mouth, what they might be doing to negatively impact their health. Because maybe it could work for them, maybe it might not. But I would hate to see someone jump into a diet that's restrictive and then cause harm rather than good.
All right. And we'll talk about what harm she's talking about or what in general their concerns are. But real quick, Jill, when you hear people talk keto, you assume they mean what? What's the definition?
It's traditionally it's a low carbohydrate, high fat, kind of medium amount of protein diet. So those are the three macronutrients that are found in our foods. And so we can manipulate the proportion in which they're in our diet to impact change in the body.
So if you're at 10% carbs, 20% protein, the rest fat, so roughly 70% fat, how much does that differ with put, and this is an impossible question because what are we all eating? But for people who are not on any sort of a fad diet, I mean, what do we kind of guess that a normal day would look like?
Well, so the standard range for that we would recommend for a person without clinical conditions for a normal carbohydrate intake would be 45 to 65% of your daily calories from carbohydrate.
Whoa.
So if you think about 10% or that's a very, very big difference. And there are modified keto. You can vary the amount of grams, but it's a big, big difference. Same thing with fat. You know, we want to max out at about 35% of our daily calories from fat if that's the standard range. So if you look at a ketogenic diet, it's very, very different.
Finally, this week, a hot button discussion that might seem to be just about one health club, one gym, but in reality, it's about who should get taxpayer support, who gets tax breaks, who does not. Midtown Athletic Club in Rochester is one of the city's most popular and one of the most exclusive. Family memberships start at $336 per month.
Midtown is planning a $10 million expansion, and they asked Monroe County's Industrial Development Agency for more than $500,000 in taxpayer support to build it. But critics say that this is just a case of a wealthy private club trying to use taxpayers to get even wealthier. In this clip, you'll hear principal and general manager of Midtown Athletic Club, Glenn William, followed by Kent Gardner of the Center for Governmental Research.
People have choices of where they go, where they move, where they're going to continue their career. Rochester, New York needs to have the Wegmans, needs to have the George Eastman Museums, needs to have the Strong Museums of Play, needs to have something as unique as a Midtown Athletic Club that you will not find in Cleveland. You won't find it in Albany. You won't find it in Columbus, Ohio. It's recognized as one of the most unique full-service athletic clubs in the United States. It is a tangible attraction for people looking to make a choice to come to Rochester or not to come to Rochester. That has an incredible benefit to this community.
I don't think, honestly, that the community as a whole should care whether Glenn does this whole project or not. Honestly, I don't think it's our business. I think it's the business of his members. And if his members want to do a $10 million expansion, you know, they're welcome to do that. And I don't think that if it got scaled back because we didn't offer a tax incentive, that it should be a concern for the community as a whole.
But
yeah,
what Glenn is also arguing that it's hard to measure this, but without the Midtowns in Rochester, you may not get...
Yeah, and I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all.
The Strong Museum of Play.
Oh, no, Midtown. Hang on, Evan. Don't roll them all together.
He's putting Midtown on that list.
He is putting Midtown on that list, and then he said that he thought that Planet Fitness also should receive exactly the same consideration that he gets.
Well, under the law. Yeah, I just said under the law. That was my only point.
Okay, but that was right after the conversation about putting Midtown in with the Strong Museum of Play. Okay,
if the IDA allows Planet Fitness to apply and get funds, they should get it. That's my point.
Okay, well, that's a separate question. So,
you're talking about the IDA changing the IDA. That's what the question is.
No, not at all, Glenn. Let me finish the point that we're starting with, Glenn. You know, are there assets that are cultural assets that really set the place apart? And I think that I've been a strong proponent of the cultural sector and the role that the cultural sector plays in encouraging people to relocate and stay in Rochester. And certainly, a Strong Museum of Play is actually a tourism asset that definitely brings in people from outside the region. But let's talk about the Eastman School of Music, you know, Kodak Theater, George Eastman Museum, on and on with our major cultural institutions. You know, Midtown's a lovely facility. You're not in the same league. I'm sorry. So you're part of it, but you're not quite up there.
I respectfully disagree.
Of course you do.
And that's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. Thanks for joining us. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM. We're also on the WXXI mobile app. He's Evan. Well, he was Evan. He stepped out. I'm still Megan. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday.